Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Bat Around. I'm your host, Paul Valley. He's my co-host, Ryan Blake. Ryan, good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Paul. My headset is not working, so I'm going to let you riff for a second and get that sorted out. But I could read your lips. You said hello, so I'm saying hi back. Just give me one sec.
Awesome. In the meantime, I want to point out that today's show is brought to you by Atman's. If you're craving the classic New York deli experience, look no further than the Atman's Deli in Baltimore's Harbor Point. Corned beef piled high, hand-rolled bagels, and something different, a bar. Atman's Harbor Point. Go to atmansdeli.com for daily specials. You're starting today's show with an Orioles sale update from Andy Kotzka last night, amongst others. MLB's ownership committee has approved the purchase of a controlling stake of the Orioles, according to a source with knowledge, although the entire MLB ownership group still needs to approve the sale. This is an important intermediary step, but it does not finalize the sale. Now, Ryan, it was announced this past week that the final sale approval should be in place by April, with an outside chance of having it done by opening day. Big step last night. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's massive. And I think the biggest thing for me is the fact that Mr. Rubenstein has been at the spring training games, introducing himself to fans, walking around, saying hello. He was at a game with John Angelos just last week. It's exciting that, you know, he's so involved already. And I think that bodes well for the sale of the team. Look, the ownership group is not going to deny the sale. They're not going to stand in the way of this. They want John Angelos out just like the rest of us do. So it's kind of just formalities along the way. This is going to happen, and it's going to happen soon. And boy, is it exciting.
It's super exciting. Rubenstein, I think it's Rubenstein.
It is Rubenstein. I need to get that in my head. I had the same thing with Mike Elias. I thought it was Elias for a while, and I would mix and match here and there. It'll take a minute to get it down. It is Rubenstein based on interviews that I've seen. So that's my bad. I'll get there.
It's just like me with like for a Adalius Thomas. For the longest time, people kept calling him Adalius, and to the point where it made me think his name was Adalius. And then when I was producing Glenn Clark's show, we had Adalius on all the time, and I just straight up asked him. I was like, "Is your name Adalius?" Or Adalius, he said Adalius. Or like Haloti Ngata, whose name is Ngata, but I call him Ngata. Haloti Ngata. Yeah.
We all called him Haloti Ngata, and the announcers would call him Ngata, and it was like, why are you enunciating it so hard? Maybe they were doing it right. But I don't know. I'm like 95% sure this is true. I'm pretty certain that it's actually pronounced Nick Markakis in the Greek. And Nick, being a quiet guy, never bothered to correct anybody. So we always called him Markakis, and he was like, whatever.
Really?
I'm pretty sure. I don't remember where I heard that. I'm pretty certain that the Greek is Markakis.
That would be crazy. I love Nick Markakis. I don't think I could ever call him Markakis.
No. There was one MLB The Show game. I don't remember what year it was, but they had him programmed as Markakis. And that was interesting to hear.
Do you remember the MLB The Show, like the 2006 version when Nick was a rookie, but they didn't have the rights to his name yet? So he was just like, the right fielder who was left-handed, and that player just absolutely raked, and you knew it was Nick Markakis. You would just change his name to Markakis. I remember that. Anyway,
the John Bell treatment.
Dude, I remember one year I went to Walmart to buy MLB The Show, and the guy who was running that department to get the game out for me, he says, "Yeah, you know, my cousin." He was clearly like Mediterranean, like either Greek or Italian. He goes, "Yeah, my cousin plays for the Orioles." And I'm like, here we go. He's going to tell me Nick Markakis is his cousin. I go, "Oh, yeah, who?" And he goes, "Markakis." And ever since then, we're talking 15 years ago, ever since then, I'm just sitting there like, he's not your cousin. You don't even know how to pronounce his name. And now you tell me it's Markakis. Maybe that guy was right the entire time, and he really was his cousin this entire time until this moment. I was like, that effing liar. Nick Markakis is not your cousin. You don't even know how to say his name.
Hey, you never know. Some guys just don't bother to correct people. Like Zach Britton, with it being a K instead of an H. His name is Zachary, spelled with a K.
Yeah.
And we shortened it to Zach with an H for some reason. And it just, he didn't care to correct anybody. It didn't bother him. Maybe that's the case here.
I worked with a guy at a restaurant for 6 months. He was a cook. And I kept calling him Kyle because I could have sworn I heard somebody call him Kyle. And then one day I come in and he's standing there talking to his parents. I'm like, all right, Justin, we'll see you later. And I said, your name's Justin? He goes, yeah. I was like, why did you let me call you Kyle for 6 months? He goes, didn't seem important enough to correct you. I was like, that's ridiculous.
See?
Anyway.
Yeah, some dudes just don't care.
Off the rails. Well, Rubenstein, one step closer to being the new control person for the Baltimore Orioles. They're hoping to get it done by opening day, and I really think they want to. I really think that they wanted to have this thing done by opening day, and I wouldn't be surprised if it happens. They're saying more likely April, but if it happens on opening day, it would not shock me. If it does, do you think there's a move or an action that coincides with the announced finalization of this sale? Like, maybe they announce an Adley Rutschman extension. He's like the one guy that's not represented by Scott Boras. Or is it something less, like Rubenstein throws out the first pitch on opening day? What do you think?
Yeah, I really don't know. I'm not sure that something will coincide with the announcement that the sale is official, only because, you know, that's the focus at this point. I don't think that Rubenstein is trying to negotiate a contract extension with anybody while he's also trying to negotiate the final sale of the team. I don't see that happening immediately, but I absolutely do think that, you know, we'll have updates along those lines throughout the course of the season if the players are willing to discuss that during the season. I don't think a Rutschman extension is – look, it's absolutely a need. And I think it's something that we all want. I don't think it's an immediate need. So it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, they kind of don't accelerate that process just yet. But yeah, I think once the sale is official, you know, those dominoes will start to fall. And look, if it's something as simple as he throws out the first pitch on opening day, the uproar that man is going to get when he steps onto the field is going to be remarkable. I can't wait to be sitting up there in the upper deck watching. And I really hope they do something to acknowledge him on opening day, because
we
have get a heck of a reception.
Our tickets for opening day. My best friend and I, who bought me this hat. What a guy bought me this hat. And how sweet is this hat? Right? Like, it's the best hat that the Orioles have ever done. I can't stop looking at it. It looks so fresh and so clean, and it's just awesome. But
I think I commented on that last week. I want to
awesome.
Get one of those.
It fits my head pretty perfectly. It needs to be broken a little bit, but it fits my head pretty perfectly, which is usually unheard of with new era. So awesome hat. Awesome job.
Yeah. I got the postseason hat as soon as they clinched last year, and it's a great hat. It's got the cartoon bird logo, the postseason emblem on the side. But those new era hats, man, they don't fit right.
I got the flex fit one because I didn't want to deal with that issue, and because I have plenty of Orioles hats that are 7 3/8 that just don't fit my head correctly. And but like the next size up is too big and the next size down is too small, so I'm like 7 3/8 with an asterisk, right? So I got the flex fit one, and it's got this weird thing where, like, you can see it here on this one where, like, the sides are indented and all that, and it's a weird look, it's a weird fit. It just feels like it flares out. And anyway, so I have the hat. I won't wear it that much because it's of the way it fits my head. I was really excited about it, and now I'm just like, it's just something to have. But this hat, freaking awesome. Best friend bought it for me. We got our tickets, section 85, three rows off the field. So we're right on top of Mount Baltimore. So, and we got them,
85
is
85?
Right.
The even numbers are the ones that are on the field level. 85, the odd numbers are the ones undercover.
Whatever. We have good seats. Yeah.
Either way, you're right out there in left field. Seats. Great seats. I'll be in my usual 328 row one. I had those 29 game plans starting last year. It's front row of the upper deck from behind the plate, looking straight down the third base line.
I sat there with you last year when we went to a game against the Red Sox in May, where we were supposed to sing "Dear Maria, Count Me In," and we both chickened out. But
yeah. Do you think Mountcastle goes back to that as his walk-up song?
I think he's going to switch it up because I don't think he used it when he came back off the IL from Vertigo. And like,
I don't think he did either.
They said that he struggled while he had that, and then when he came back, he was just absolutely tearing the cover off the ball, and it wasn't his walk-up song. So probably not. Maybe he'll go with a new all-time low song, hopefully.
All I know is we need somebody to have a walk-up song that the crowd sings along to every time without fail. We had that opportunity with Mountcastle and Dear Maria, Count Me In. We had a little bit with Gunner doing the Gwen Stefani song. The woo-hoo, yee-hoo. We got a little bit of that. We need something to keep the fans engaged.
Do you watch WWE at all? I used to watch it regularly. The last time I watched it regularly was through WrestleMania in 2022. So it's been almost 2 years since I last watched it regularly. But every time that I see something, like, not every time, but when I see something, it's Seth Rollins has his walk-up music, and it's got this, it's almost like a Seven Nation Army type chant, but different. It's got a little bit more flamboyant, it got a little bit more flair to it, and the entire crowd hums along to it, like, loudly, like you can hear it. If we need something like that for somebody, maybe Jackson Holiday can do that, you know, somebody.
Yeah. I think it's Bryson Stott with the Phillies had one last year. I don't remember what the song was, but you know, it was one that everyone would sing along to. And then they had a moment in the playoffs where he came up to the bat, the whole crowd was singing that song, and then first pitch grand slam. I was like, that's an awesome moment.
Really cool. What's also cool, speaking of the Sale, the team, the Orioles are taking on Chris Sale today in Grapefruit League action. The team is a major league best 12-2 in spring training, which, you know what that means? Absolutely nothing. It means absolutely nothing. I'm pretty sure no other team has less than 4 or 5 losses. So the Orioles are on a roll. They just go out and they win night after night after night. We talked about this last week. And people are starting to comment on it. It just shows that the Orioles have more talent than everybody else. The Orioles minor league players are dominating other teams' minor league players because they have the number one farm system in baseball. Today's game is going to feature Dean Kramer taking on Chris Sale as they take on the Atlanta Braves. For the Orioles, the lineup is batting first, playing center field, Ryan McKenna. Batting second at catcher, Adley Rutschman. Batting third at third base, Ramon Urias. Batting fourth at second base, Jordan Westberg. Batting fifth at shortstop, Jorge Mateo. Batting sixth in left field, Colton Cowser. Batting seventh, DHing Kobe Mayo. Batting eighth in right field, Kyle Sowers. And batting ninth, the wonderkind, the guy who's just come out of nowhere at first base, Tyler Nevin. For the Braves, leading off, playing second base, Ozzie Albies. Batting second, playing third base, Austin Riley. Batting third, playing first base, Matt Olson, last year's Major League home run leader. Batting fourth at DH, Marcell Ozuna, piece of human garbage. Batting fifth, catcher, Travis d'Arnaud. Batting sixth at shortstop, Orlando Arcia. Batting seventh in left field, Jordan Luplow. Batting eighth in center field, Eli White. And batting ninth in right field, Luis Liberato, with, again, Chris Sale on the mound. Chris Sale looking to reignite his career. Had an okay season, up and down last year. He did face the Orioles in that game that you and I went to back in May, and it was the only healthy start in his career where he did not strike out a single batter because he sucks. No, he doesn't suck. The Orioles are just awesome. So it's the Atlanta Braves and Chris Sale against Dean Kramer and the Baltimore Orioles. Dean Kramer, does he need to show something in this start here after allowing 9 base runners in 4 innings pitched over his first 2 outings with a sparkling 6.75 ERA?
Yeah, it hasn't been pretty, but spring for a lot of guys isn't, you know, and we've talked about this and you know, beat this point home.
Well, let's not say that because we're going to talk about it more later on in the show.
Oh, of course. And I'm happy to continue knocking that point home. But you know, it's looking at the box score in spring training is not the appropriate way to evaluate how spring is going for these guys. Now, when the numbers are good, it means something good. When the numbers are bad, it means they're working on stuff. That's just our nature as a fan, right? We look at, you know, Gunnar Henderson has, you know, is back in gameplay and he's 5 for 7, hitting .714, or maybe 5 for 8 now. And like you see that and it's like, oh yeah, Gunnar Henderson's going to have an MVP season. You see Dean Kramer with a .675 ERA. It's like, well, he's just working on things, right? So it's hard to really evaluate how a spring is going mm-hmm. based on the box score, you know, especially with pitchers because they're working on different pitches, maybe new pitches, working different locations, trying to become more effective in certain things. And it's not what they're going to show necessarily in the regular season. So yeah, it's a little bit of a cause for concern if they're getting beat around like that. But at the same time, you want to take it with a grain of salt because really they're just trying to get themselves.
Yeah. And like you said, I mean, all we have to go off of is the box score, the game day, or like if we are able to watch the game, then we have a better idea of what's going on. But like you look at Cedric Mullins, he reached base to start. I think he led off with a walk the last game that he played. He reached second base on the Natalie ground out. And then he came out of the game with a lower half issue. And everybody's like, oh, man, he had the groin issues twice last year. What's going on? Well, this was a hamstring cramp, right? He expects to start hitting again this coming week. It was made out of a precaution. But all we see is you're watching the game day stream on MLB app and you see, oh, first inning, Cedric Mullins replaced by pinch runner Enrique Bradfield, and we start freaking out. John Means, it's announced he's not going to pitch in the Grapefruit League game this spring. Well, why not? What's wrong? He's healthy. He's going to throw on the backfield. He's going to throw live BP. He's going to throw simulated games. He still expects to get into the game by April. You know, so really all we have to go off of is what our eyes see. And there's a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes. You know, Yennier Cano didn't make his first outing in spring training until last Sunday. But there's nothing wrong with him. He's been throwing on backfields and pitching live BP because they wanted to monitor his innings after and his workload after last year, where he threw over 70 innings coming out of the bullpen in his first full season in the big league. So a lot going on that we don't see, a lot of live BP, a lot of simulated games to get people work that maybe we're not seeing them in the lineup and we start scratching our head. So, yeah, you're not at a point yet in spring training. We're under 3 weeks from opening day. You're not at the point quite yet where the results matter. But you would like to see Dean Kramer maybe start to put it together a little bit. Some of the other pitchers kind of start to put together a little bit. We'll talk about that later on in the show. But it's definitely something that it's at the very least worth keeping an eye on because Kramer's going to be in that rotation. Grayson Rodriguez, all these guys are going to be in the rotation. With now less than 3 weeks till opening day, we're getting closer to that point where it's going to start mattering what the results look like. You know,
Yeah, and I think we're going to see Kramer try to go 3 or 4 innings today at least. I'm very curious to see how he opens the game, gets through that first inning with the Braves top of the order with mm-hmm. Albies, Riley, and Olson. That's going to be a challenge for him. If he can get through that lineup and face that top three for a second time in this game, I think that's going to bode well for him to get that, you know, game experience against really good bats, seasoned veterans in this league. So I think that'll be good for him. I'm definitely, you know, excited to see what he does today. And like you said, the results don't really matter quite yet, but still want to see him pitch well. So I'm going to.
No, and it's crazy because Dean Kramer was also on the mound in that game that you and I went to against the Red Sox. And
yep.
I think he gave up 3 runs in the 3rd or 4th inning and the bases were loaded and there was still nobody out. And then Dean just got pissed and he struck out the next 3 batters on like 11 pitches. And he was pumping fastballs at like 96, 97 miles an hour at the top of the zone and just getting whiffs. Like it was one of those things where you saw Dean just be like, are you effing kidding me? No, I'm not letting this, because that happened in all of his starts in April. Right. And he was like, I'm not letting this happen. Yeah, and he just blew him away.
I think in that game we went to, I think that was the first inning, because I remember talking to you about his outing when he was through mm-hmm. like 4 or 5, because he started off not very good, like you said, and then he locked in and he settled in. And off the bat, it looked like it was going to be a bad start. But I remember having that conversation with you, I think in the middle of the 4th or 5th inning, where we said, if Dean can get through 5 without giving up any more runs, is that a good start?
Oh, yeah. And
I was like, saying,
you know,
oh,
against
yeah.
the Red Sox, so that offense, every year, no matter how bad the Red Sox may be because of their pitching and defense, the offense is still really good. Let me see this game. Maybe, oh, it was in April. It was in April. Yeah, he went 5 2/3. He gave up 7 hits, 4 earned runs. And let's look at the box score for that game.
I think it was 3 in the 1st and 1 in the 6th before he was pulled.
No, it was 1 in the 2nd and it was 3 in the 3rd.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then, yeah, you were on it then. Oh, yeah, my bad.
You're yeah, bad.
I remember thinking.
No, I'm just kidding, man. Like
no, but I just remember thinking, like, despite his struggles, if he can settle in and get through 6, like, that is a good start, even though it's a, you know, a 6 ERA. 4 earned runs in 6 innings is a 6 ERA. That's not great, but considering how it went, his ability to keep us
that
in the game was huge.
The Orioles absolutely torched them. Like, the final score, yeah, I think, was 5-4 Orioles, but it was 5-4 Orioles, but every single starter for the Orioles had at least one hit, and you had 1, 2, 3, 4 guys had multi-hit games in that game. They absolutely
was that the game where every Orioles batter had a hit by the end of the second inning?
No, because I know
there was one game like
that.
There
was a game that was probably one of those. I think that was that game against maybe the last game against the Twins, or no, I think it may have been the last game against the Yankees, right around the 4th of July when they went on that 8-game winning streak heading into the All-Star break. And
the one that was like,
yeah, they lost the first. So they had just lost 2 or 3 to the Twins, but they won that game on Sunday. Then they lost the first 2 games to the Yankees, and they won the next 2 games like 15-2 and like 14-1. I think it was that game that they scored 15 or 14 runs that you're talking about. But in this game, Kramer gave up 7 runs in 7 hits in 5 2/3 innings. The bullpen didn't give up a hit after that. The Orioles knocked around Chris Sale, 5 runs on 9 hits with 1 walk, no strikeouts.
But look, back to Dean for a second. That's, you know, that's a something I've noticed with him. There was a game in particular, I think it was against the Nationals. Dean had been, he was pitching well. He gave up, I think, an infield single to third base on a ball that should have been picked pretty easily by O'Hearn at first base. And it was kind of 2 tough luck base runners with nobody out. And then Dean finished that inning by striking out the side, and he threw 3 of the 5 hardest fastballs of his entire career.
That was the start that I was thinking of.
So he's able to kick it into that extra gear when he gets pissed off on the mound, when he's making pitches that he feels like should result in outs and don't. He does have that fire in him where he can, you know, turn it up to high gear and start pumping some gas and locating it well and getting it by hitters. So that was one of those things where it's like, yeah, Dean is, he's a guy you want.
Yeah, Dean, that start against the Nationals, 6 2/3, 4 hits, no runs, no walks, 6 strikeouts. That was his best start in April, which kind of reminded you like, oh yeah, it's still in there. He's going to be able to, he should be able to figure this out type of situation.
Yeah.
So yeah, Dean Kramer taking on Chris Sale today. Orioles spring training, a major league best, 12-2 between the Grapefruit League and the Cactus League. They have the best record in baseball right now. After having the best record in the American League last year, their season starts out with 7 series of their first 9 against teams that are sub-500. Orioles have a chance to continue the hot trend. So we'll be hoping for that. I want to remind you, today's show is brought to you by Superbook. The AL Rookie Year Futures Market is now available at Superbook, and unsurprisingly, the Orioles are favored to have a second straight winner. Jackson Holliday is the +275 favorite, with Evan Carter close behind at +325. Or if you want to go really wild, Kobe Mayo and Heston Kerstad are both at 60-1 odds. When you sign up at Superbook, use the code PRESSBOX23 and you'll receive a same-day first bet match up to $250, win or lose. So head on over to Superbook now and sign up today. Ryan, soft toss. Love this. What you got?
Let's do it. So Tuesday, the Orioles released their lineup for that day against the Phillies. And all the conversation was, oh, this offense is fun. I think like 7 of the 9 names were like prospects, and they were, you know, the good ones, right? And so we're thinking, oh, this is going to be a fun day to watch the offense. But who the hell is Albert Suarez? Why is he our starting pitcher, right? Pitching's probably not going to be great. Well, Albert Suarez went out and pitched 3 innings, gave up 2 hits, no earned runs, no walks, and struck out 7. And it was kind of a, you know, who the hell is this guy? So who is Albert Suarez? Well, he's a 34-year-old right-handed pitcher. He seemingly came out of nowhere to make this start against the Phillies and pitch really well. And they weren't minor leaguers with the Phillies either. He was striking out regulars. He got Schwarber twice, no tall task. It's Schwarber. But he also got Trey Turner. He got Alec Bohm. He got Christian Pache, a couple others in there. So it was no slouch of a Phillies lineup that he pitched really well against. He averaged 96.3 miles per hour with his four-seam fastball. He topped out at 97.5 on that four-seamer. And the last time Suarez pitched in the majors was 2017. His four-seamer averaged 93.5 miles per hour. Now, this fastball that he threw against the Phillies, it generated 10 whiffs on 17 swings. That's a 58% whiff rate on that fastball. The Orioles' single-game high for whiffs on a four-seam fastball in any regular season game last year was 10. Grayson Rodriguez did that twice. Tyler Wells did it once. Albert Suarez did it in 3 spring innings this year. Now, Suarez has been in Japan and Korea for the past 5 seasons. And he's been a pretty productive pitcher overseas. He had, I think, a 2.3 or 2.4 ERA just a couple years ago in Korea. Mm-hmm. But the velocity wasn't there, right? He was still averaging like 93 with his fastball. The Orioles signed him to a minor league deal last September, and they worked with him in Florida for a couple weeks. And then Suarez came out in the Venezuelan Winter League and suddenly was throwing heat. He was throwing gas. So the Orioles pitching lab clearly unlocked something with him. Now, Suarez is probably still on the outside looking in for a roster spot, especially with Julio Teheran now in the mix. But it's possible that the Orioles have unlocked something here, which they seem to be pretty good at. And Suarez will get another chance tomorrow in a split squad game. The Orioles play 2 games against the Blue Jays, 1 at Ed Smith Stadium and 1 at the Blue Jays facility in Dunedin. And Suarez will be starting the away game. So I'm excited to see if he can carry some of this momentum over. But Albert Suarez, possibly an
injury to keep an eye on. When I looked at the box score, because I was at work when he did all this, I looked at the box score and I saw that he had struck out 7 of 9 Phillies batters. Now, that game was televised, and I was trying to watch it, but I had a lot going on. It's been pretty busy at work the last few weeks, and so, like, I just wasn't able to watch. I think that was the same day that Jackson Holliday went 3 for 4. And
I think so, yeah. And those first 2 hits were extra base hits.
Exactly. Now, the one was a triple. I think the guy lost because it landed on the warning track, and it was a towering fly ball. I thought it hit the warning track.
I don't know. It did look like – so Pache is their center fielder, and he's a really good defensive outfielder. It did look like he didn't really have a beat on it. I think he had a chance to catch it, but it would have been up against the wall, I'm pretty sure.
I'll have to go back and look at it. I remember watching it twice, like, did that hit the wall or did that land on the warning track? And the second time I watched it, I'm like, I think he hit the warning track first. And because it looked like he just didn't have a beat on it. But – either way, I tweeted out, who the hell is Albert Suarez? He just struck out 7 of 9 9 outs against a pretty representative Phillies lineup. I think it was only missing Castellanos and Bryce Harper. And people were like, oh, it's a small sample size. This happens every year. Like, no, you don't see pitchers go out striking out 7 of 9 outs that you've never heard of before against representative solid major league lineups. Right. Like, this isn't something that just happens all the time. So it's definitely I didn't realize that he was averaging just under 94 miles an hour with his fastball as of last September. And then when he signed with the Orioles, suddenly he goes to over 96 miles an hour with his fastball average. So definitely something worth keeping an eye on. If he maybe they put him in the bullpen, maybe he's pitching depth at AAA. But if you have a guy like that and he's more than just smoke and mirrors, it's definitely something big for the Orioles, who I still think need another starting pitcher, and I don't think it should be Julio Teheran. You know, they're one injury away from Teheran moving into that starting rotation. I think they need somebody else. There's a couple guys still out there, namely Mike Lorenzen, Jordan Montgomery, Blake Snell. You can have him because he doesn't pitch deep into games. But you know, if this is a guy in Albert Suarez who could be something, maybe they can catch lightning in the bottle for a fourth time in the last 3 or 4 years. You know, it would be something that would be really awesome for the team. So today's Soft Toss with Ryan Blake was brought to you by Ruth's Chris. Whether you're celebrating a special milestone, entertaining clients, or simply enjoying a night out, count on Ruth's Chris to deliver to you the finest steaks, the best service, and a level of hospitality that has made Ruth's Chris one of the most revered names in steaks since 1965. Make your reservation now at RuthsChris.com. My good buddy, Josh, he was in my wedding party. He said, good morning, go O's. Morning, Josh, thanks for tuning in. AJ is his first two initials, but he goes by Josh. So morning, Josh, thanks for tuning in. Pitching struggles for the Orioles. We talked about 12-2. Yet despite that, the pitching has given some pause for concern. Craig Kimbrel did toss a scoreless inning last night, though he did walk a batter. But he has an ERA of 15 with 9 hits and 1 walk allowed and just 3 strikeouts in 4 innings pitched. Grayson Rodriguez has allowed 8 base runners in 3 1/3 innings pitched last night in the start. Cionel Perez allowed 2 more runs on 3 hits last night to leave his spring ERA at 17-18. He has just 1 scoreless outing under his belt this spring. We mentioned Dean already and his 2.25 whip through 2 starts. Again, it's still basically, well, now it's beyond the first half of spring training, but we're still just about 3 weeks away from opening day. At what point, Ryan, do we need to look at this pitching, specifically Cionel Perez and Craig Kimbrel, and start to get a little nervous?
Kimbrel, I'm not nervous about yet because he's trying to get acclimated to a new team, a new environment, right? So Kimbrel's a vet. I think he's going to be fine. I think it's likely that expected to be
Elias
our closer.
Said that
or is
he
that going
to be brought in to be the primary closer?
Okay, so yeah, Kimbrel. Look, I'm not too concerned with him. Cionel Perez, I'm a little more on the ropes about. He's a guy who has been extremely volatile in his Orioles career. He had a really good 2022. He posted a 1.40 ERA, and then last year there was a portion of the early season where he was pitching so badly that it was I'm ready to cut ties with Cionel Perez, get this guy off my team. And then down the stretch, he was arguably our best reliever.
From June to like the third week of September, his ERA was like 1.56. He was phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really tough to figure him out, you know? Like I don't think his spot in the bullpen is in jeopardy at this point based on, you know, the injuries and the loss of DL Hall. I think he's going to be on the team. I think he's going to be in the bullpen. But man, it's so weird to like try to figure out if you're gonna get good Cionel Perez or bad Cionel Perez, right? And so yeah, I'd like to see him start to put it together a little bit better this spring, as you know, I think that would bode well for him going into the season because he seems like the kind of pitcher who, when he's struggling, it carries with him through each outing until he's able to snap back into, you know, better shape, I guess. So, yeah, I would like to see him do a little bit better. In terms of the starters, look, Grayson is coming off of a remarkable second half in which he established himself as one of the top pitchers in baseball, especially at his age. But he's going to have those outings where he struggles to put guys away and gives up a lot of base runners, as he did last night. I think it's just a matter of for him on, you know, working on things, trying to get in season shape. I don't think this outing last night is going to be indicative of what we're going to see from Grayson Rodriguez over the course of the season. But with that in mind, obviously you want to try to limit base runners. You want to be able to put guys away when you get ahead in the count. And sometimes he struggles with that. But I think overall, he's going to find more success than not when it comes to putting guys away. He's got 2 or 3 great strikeout pitches. And I think he's going to be just fine. But yeah, as we've talked about and we'll continue to talk about, as spring continues to progress, you want to see the results be there, especially with a guy like Grayson, who now that Bradish is not in the picture for the foreseeable future, Grayson needs to step up and be that number two behind Corbin Burns. I think he will, but I'd like to see him carry some.
Now, he is working on a new pitch. He developed a 2-seam fastball, so he's probably still trying to get a good handle on that, probably using this start as another work on things, start with still getting his ups and trying to get a little bit deeper into the game. Maybe not his next start, but I imagine 2 starts from now is when he's really going to try and get into season mode, where he's looking to minimize the amount of pitches he's throwing each inning, be a little bit more dominant and get deeper into the game so that he can be ready for the start of the season. Because again, We are just 19 days away from opening day at this point, which is awesome. It's just awesome. But like,
yeah. And I think with Grayson, one thing that that stood out to me on his line from last night was in those 3 1/3 innings, he only struck out one batter, which that's not Grayson Rodriguez, right? He goes three innings, he's going to strike out at least two or three guys typically, right? I think based on the fact that he only struck out one, it was his outing was supposed to be more a matter of, you know, locating pitches well, working on that two seam, regardless of the count. You know, get ahead 1-2 on a guy. You're not necessarily trying to strike him out in spring training. You're trying to throw a good pitch. And sometimes those pitches get hit, and that's just the nature of the game. So I think that, you know, once he starts to get into season mode, those strikeout numbers will start to ramp up a little bit. And, you know, he'll start to limit those base runners a little bit, purely based on the fact that he will be trying to strike guys out when he has two strikes on him, not just throw a, you know, a good pitch that feels good.
So, yeah, I don't think it's time to worry about any pitchers yet. Even CNL Perez, the stuff's too good, and we've seen more success than failure in an Orioles uniform, even though those first 3 months last year felt like an eternity with how bad he was in that in those first, well, 2.5 months of the season before he really started to pitch well. And he pitched really well against the Cubs in a June outing, and then he went on the injured list. But then he came back, he had one bad outing, and then he was just nails the rest of the way. So I'm still giving CNL the benefit of the doubt, but he's like the one guy in that bullpen where it's like, dude, if anybody's got to show good results, it's got to be you. You know, it's got to be you. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt for now, but I'm really hoping that he's going to right the ship before too long. Want to remind you, today's show brought to you by mygamblingproblem.org. If you or a loved one has a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit helpmygamblingproblem.org for free confidential services. Ryan, we talked about it last week. Coby Mayo, Jackson Holliday, off to good starts with this team. Neither one of them has really slowed down. We did see Holliday go 0-for-3 last night with a strikeout, but Coby Mayo just tearing the cover off the ball. Is he making a case? Like, and again, I know we talked about this last week, but he continues to play well, continues to hit. His defense is reportedly looking so much better than it did last year at third base. You know, you look at Jordan Westberg, he hasn't had a bad spring, but he has 8 strikeouts and 27 plate appearances with no walks, while Mayo, in the same 27 plate appearances, has 4 walks and 5 Ks. He's hitting .311, 4 doubles. I think he's got 5 RBIs. Is he making a case to be on this roster? I don't think it would be over Jordan Westberg, but if he can play third base, first base, maybe a little bit of outfield, and the bat is the way it is, I mean, Coby Mayo may hit in the middle of this Orioles lineup for a really long time. Does that have an opportunity to start on opening day this year?
I think he's absolutely making a case for himself. I'm not sure I see it happening unless there's something in the works to get Ramon Arias off
the roster. There's got to be. I can't imagine there's not.
There has to be. And Arias could also play a role in whether or not Jackson Holliday makes this roster. There, it's a matter of, you know, how many outfielders are they going to keep, first of all? Is it going to be 4? Is it going to be 5? Because with Kowser and Kyle Stowers both hitting well this spring, Kerstad hasn't been off to a great start, but he established himself decently enough toward the end of last year. I think at this point, it's likely that Kerstad opens up in AAA and maybe one of those other two outfielders. But in any event, there's just too many players worthy of a big league roster. And Coby Mayo, I think, is absolutely one of them. It's just a matter of, do they have a roster space available for him? And I think the X factor there is, are they going to unload Ramon Arias, whether that's in a trade, or are they going to be willing to DFA a guy who won a gold glove 2 years ago? I don't know. Yeah. I don't see that happening. But you look at Ramon Arias, and the bat hasn't been there. The bat has not played for this Orioles team. And so, look, if you're trying to find a role for the number one prospect in baseball in Jackson Holliday, or an absolute ox in Coby Mayo, you got to get rid of some of these guys. I think Jorge Mateo is making the team as a utility guy. He can play shortstop. I think he's gotten a couple starts at second base. He's played a little bit of outfield. I know he's been working out there a good bit. you got to be able to open up roster space for these guys who are going to help your team. And Kobe Mayo is absolutely a guy who is going to help your team. And so I think they need to figure out what to do with Ramon Urias. I really hope he's part of a package for a pitcher, whether it's a reliever or another starter, a back end guy. But I don't think you can justify having Ramon Urias on the opening day roster with one or both of Jackson Holliday and Kobe Mayo down at AAA. I don't think you can justify
I don't either. Maybe this is that move that I was alluding to, that I don't think that the Orioles are going to announce a move. Like, that's not how baseball works. That's how movies work, right? Oh, new ownership. And, here's the Adley Rutschman extension, or here's a Jordan Montgomery signing, or in this case, here's a trade of Ramon Urias, Connor Norby, and Cade Povich to the Marlins for Jesus Luzardo, which I do think at this point, because you look at Ramon Urias doesn't have a spot on this team. Connor Norby doesn't have a spot on this team. You look at guys like that, you look at the Marlins' needs, and you look at the Orioles' needs, what kind of a package would it take to get Luzardo, and would Ramon Urias and Connor Norby be part of that package? Because Kobe Mayo has basically made himself untouchable. Samuel Basayo, untouchable. We all know Jackson Holliday is the untouchable of all untouchables, right? So I just can't imagine that there's not a trade in the works. Maybe that's the big move that would just happen to coincide. But, I mean, Luzardo's already been announced as the opening day starter for the Marlins. That doesn't mean anything except that he's the opening day starter if he's still there. But I just can't.
The Red Sox said that Alex Cora said at the end of last year that Chris Sale was his 2024 opening day starter.
Exactly.
And he got traded to the Braves.
Exactly.
So who really knows?
I don't know, man. I just can't imagine that you're going to DFA Urias. Connor Norby has nothing left to prove in AAA, at least not with the bat. But they don't have a spot on this roster. Something's got to give. But again, last year, I thought Urias and Mateo were going to be traded during spring training also, and neither thing happened. So who the hell knows? Maybe the Orioles just carry a bunch of players that just don't play. I have no clue. Jackson Holliday, on the other hand, I think he's got to be on your opening day roster as your starting second baseman, or maybe you're starting shortstop with Gunnar at third and Westberg at second. I mean, last year we thought Gunnar was starting the year as the starting third baseman, and on the opening day he's DHing and Ramon Urias is playing third base. And then Ramon Urias hit a home run on opening day. So you never know what's going to happen, but I think Jackson Holliday absolutely has to be on this roster. You look at the hits that he's got. He's now 7-for-18 since starting the year 0-for-6 with 5 strikeouts. He's now 7-for-18. And I look at this guy, and Tim Kirkchin was on Glenn Clark Radio earlier this week. And the only reason that you would hold Holliday down is because you're worried that he's going to struggle, he might need more seasoning. And Kirkchin on that said, remember A-Rod struggled when he came up, was sent back down, he came back and he hit .358 the next season. When he's this good, it's worth throwing him in there. The really great ones figure it out, and I think he will. Jackson Holliday's big hits have come off Raisel Iglesias. They came off of Zach Wheeler. They came off of he got a big hit off of somebody else too, didn't he?
I think he did, but he had
two extra base hits off of Zach Wheeler. Literally, I think a day after he was announced to have like a 3-year, $120 million contract extension. Zach Wheeler. So like, this is a guy who he put on 10 pounds of muscle. He's been swinging a hot bat since his early struggles. He's got that pedigree. His dad was just a hoss, right? Like, I just think Jackson Holliday has been earmarked to be on this opening day roster since the winter meetings, essentially. And he's done nothing, in my opinion, to make it so that he's not on this roster.
Yeah, he's too talented. 7-for-12 after a slow start to the spring. The dude's just he rakes. He's just another guy the Orioles have that absolutely rakes. And I think you have to find a spot for him. And we've seen a lot of young players come up and struggle right off the bat and then figure it out, right? Gunnar Henderson came up, had a really good September for the Orioles, his true rookie season, I suppose, or his pre-rookie season, whatever you want to call it. And then April and May of last year, he was flat out not good. He was too selective at the plate. He wasn't willing to hit the outside, the outer half pitch, drive that the other way. And eventually he figured out, like, all right, I just need to play my game. And it clicked, and he went on to have a fantastic season and win Rookie of the Year. So, look, I think you have to put Jackson Holliday on your opening day roster. I think that even if he struggles, you give him a longer leash than you would with a lot of guys. And if it seems like a mental thing that he's struggling, then, yeah, maybe send him back down to AAA to reset. But we've seen it time and time again. You let these guys continue to face big league pitching, they're eventually going to figure it out. They're too good not to. And I think it's good for a player's confidence to, you know, have that long leash and be able to figure things out at the big league level. We saw it with Ryan Mountcastle a couple years ago. He was really struggling for a time. And then, you know, they didn't option. There was talk about maybe you option Mountcastle back to AAA to reset and work on some things, but they let him play it out in the bigs and he started raking again. And I think the Orioles have a lot of guys with that mentality where it's just, you know, continue getting these looks against big league pitchers. Hi, Bruce. And, you know, eventually things are going to be all right. And so Jackson Holliday he's been around big league clubhouses his whole life, you know, following his dad around. He's too good to not figure it out, even if he comes off and struggles a little bit right out of the gate. So, yeah, find a spot for him. Get him in the lineup every day. Give him until the end of May, see how he's doing, and then reevaluate.
Just like everybody should be able to figure out Jackson Holliday and how good he's going to be, everybody should also have already figured out how good Royal Farms chicken is. Rofo chicken is cheaper by the dozen. Right now, get a 12-piece mix for just $20. Plus, you can get two hot, good-to-go sandwiches for just $6, and a family order of Western fries is just $5. So stop by your neighborhood Royal Farms today for these and other great offers. Speaking of Jackson Holliday, spring breakout rosters have been revealed. Jackson Holliday, of course, is on that. We're going to go through this roster pretty quickly here. Pitchers, right-handed pitcher Trace Bright, right-handed pitcher Keegan Gillies, right-handed pitcher Nolan Hoffman, left-handed pitcher Cade Povich, right-handed pitcher Yaki Rivera, right-handed pitcher Cade Stroud. The catchers, Silas Ardoin, how do you pronounce his name?
I saw an article the other day. I think it's Ardway.
Silas Ardway.
It doesn't look like it, but it's
Samuel Basayo, who is not going to catch in the Orioles breakout game because he won't catch till the end of April. Connor Pavloni and Creed Willems. Infielders, Leandro Arias, Frederick Bencosme, Billy Cook, Jackson Holliday, Kobe Mayo, Connor Norby, Max Wagner, and then outfielders Dylan Beavers, Enrique Bradfield Jr., Matthew Etzel, Judd Babian, John Rhodes, Thomas Sosa, Braylon Tavera. There's some names in those position players, man. There are some names. How are we feeling about this? What exactly is this spring breakout? Is it just to showcase minor league talent and have them play each other? Is that just essentially what it is?
I think that's what it is. Yeah, it's just one of Major League Baseball's ways to grow the game, I guess, try to market their young talent. It's interesting to see only six pitchers. I don't know how many
spring breakout games. The Orioles only have one. The Orioles only have one.
Oh, all right. Then, yeah, six pitchers should be fine. You know, Cade Povich probably gets the start, and then you see the other guys come in.
And besides your DH, guarantee.
But, yeah, they can – besides your DH, you're going to have Jackson Holliday, Kobe Mayo, Connor Norby all start around the infield. Billy Cook's probably your first baseman. Maybe Max Wagner. I don't know if he's played much first base, but I know he's a third baseman by trade. Basayo's going to be in there as your DH. You probably start Silas behind the plate. And then your outfield, you've got Dylan Beavers, Enrique Bradfield, and Judd Fabian. Mm-hmm. That's a squad right there. So I think this is going to be fun. They're going to go up against the Pirates. Paul Skeens is on that roster, so we're going to get to see some of these guys go up against the last year's number one overall pick, just like we saw Jackson Holliday. We kind of saw it. We saw it on iPhone videos after the fact because it wasn't televised anywhere. Shout out Masson and Major League Baseball for that one. Four number one overall picks in that game. And no, not televised. And look, that's a game that you have to have eyes on, right? It can't be limited to the people that are at the game. That's something that you need a live look in on MLB Network. Even if you don't have broadcasting rights to that game, show us a live look in, you know, to see these number one overall picks. And then I tweeted about this. You had Henry Davis, another number one overall pick, going up against former Cy Young winner Corbin Burns, and that at-bat ended in a three-run homer. Right? That's not the result we want as Orioles fans, but that is objectively a very cool baseball thing to see. Right? A number one overall pick going yard off of a former Cy Young winner, that's awesome. And supposedly that was after Corbin Burns had been squeezed a little bit in his at-bat against Rowdy Tellez. So maybe he should have been out of the inning before then. But look, man, you got to be able to market your young guys. And I wish that game was televised, but it's cool that we're going to get to see this roster face off against Paul Skeens again. And that one will be broadcast everywhere.
Yeah. And look, the Orioles are actually about to be on TV a lot coming up. I know they play the next 3 days on television. They're on MLB TV today and tomorrow. They're on Masson on Monday. That's only their third Masson, which means they still have four after that. They actually, after next weekend, they play three games in a row on Masson. And then I think the final Masson, I think they play Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday on Masson, or Sunday, Monday, Tuesday on Masson. And then the final game of the spring for the Orioles is I think it's the 23rd. I think that they are. I think their final spring game is the 23rd, or their final home spring game is the 23rd, with the final game being the 24th, which is weird because other teams play till Tuesday. But the Orioles are done 2 weeks from now. And so their final home game on the 23rd is going to be on Masson also, leading up to the regular season, the beginning of the regular season. So we're going to see them on TV.
24th. Yeah, they play that Sunday, the 24th, against the Twins at home, and then they're off until Thursday, the 28th. So, weird break. By the way, can we talk about how weird it is that the Dodgers and Padres have a two-game series in – it's Korea, right? They open the season March 20th and 21st, and then they have two more spring training games after that?
The Mariners and Dodgers did that in Japan. It was either Japan or Australia. I think it was Australia. It was Japan.
And they had spring training games after that.
Because if you remember, Tim Beckham was like hit like a grand slam in that game. He started a year with like four home runs in the first week. And Ichiro led that game off for the Mariners because it was in Japan. It was his final game as a major leaguer. It was like 2017, 2018, something like that. Final game as a major leaguer. And I think he went 0-1 with a strikeout or something like that. But it was like, he just to be a part of that series, he was on the Mariners roster for that game, and then he retired. Yeah. So it has happened before. I like it. Although that one happened a lot sooner in the year. I think that happened like mid-March, and I think there were still like 2 weeks of spring training left after that. So they had regular season stats for a good while before their next game. But yeah, I like it, man. It gives you like, literally we're like a week away from watching actual Major League Baseball. You know, so I think that that's really cool. And then it's only a week till they get things started up again. So I'm pretty excited about that myself. But
it's just weird. Now I have to have my fantasy draft before the 20th.
For two
whatever.
Games?
No big deal. Yeah. I mean, I'd like to. I don't know. It feels weird to have a draft after season stats have already been accumulated.
Yeah, I get that. It's like, oh, this guy's off to a hot start, and if he's a big-time player, maybe it makes somebody take him first overall. Who the hell knows? I don't know. I suck at fantasy baseball. Right. I've played twice, and like it was like the worst time I've ever had in my life. So it was so much to keep up on, and everybody knows me as a baseball guy, and I think I finished dead last both times because I'd rather watch the games. I don't care about my fantasy team when it comes to baseball, you know, and I'm such an Fair Orioles enough. Guy yeah. that I'm going to be more prone to pick Orioles guys, you know?
Well, this is year seven that we're coming up on the Dynasty League that I'm commissioner of. And so it's exciting, man. I've got Gunner as my middle infielder. I have too many good young shortstop third baseman type. I've got Austin Riley and Jose Ramirez, Bo Bichette. So it's hard to find roster space for Gunnar Henderson. I might have to make a trade, but
you gotta have.
I love fantasy baseball, man. Just
you gotta
keep
have
me a little more invested.
Gunnar's going to be an MVP candidate this year, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, he's going to be.
So spring breakout is Orioles game is on March 14th at 7 p.m. on MLB Network, taking on the Pittsburgh Pirates. So that's going to be a ton of fun. I will be sure to be watching that. I'm also going to be sure to pick up this month's edition of the PressBox print issue. If you haven't yet, make sure you pick up the new print issue of PressBox, which is available for free at your neighborhood Royal Farms or any of the other hundreds of locations around town. On the cover, we dive into the promise of spring as we look at the Orioles' hopes to take another step towards the World Series this season. You can also read the entire issue right now at PressBoxOnline.com. We're going to get to some chats here from some of the people tuning in to the show. Not much here today. The Backup Binge podcast, they came out. Thanks for tuning in. Morning, gents. Paul rocking the new hat. Awesome. It is awesome. This hat is like my favorite new thing right now. Like, my daughter's 2 months old today, so I don't think she's that new anymore. So this is like my new favorite thing right now, at least for the next day. And then I'll go back to it being my daughter. No, my daughter will always be my favorite thing for the rest of my life. We already showed Josh's comment. Reese Dowell said M. So to you too. I don't know. Yeah.
Same. I feel dude. It. Yeah.
And then Maria and Marcus DeShiruka. Stan coming on today. I guess Maria, that you had Maria and Marcus, you guys may not have been tuning in for a while. Back in November, we ended the 2 hour plus version of this show. We moved it to a 1 hour show from 10 to 11 every Saturday morning. Still the same name, still the same host, new co-host, Ryan Blake. And so Stan doesn't come on the show anymore. Stan does his own shows on Tuesdays and Thursdays still. I was talking with Stan last week a little bit. I do plan on getting him on the show throughout this season. He just hasn't been here yet, but he doesn't have a regular role on this show anymore. So no, Stan will not be coming on the show today. I also want to point out that that's the last of the comments. Not a lot of interaction today.
Shout out to my dad, though. I think he's watching. He probably doesn't know how to comment on YouTube. I doubt he even has an account, but I sent him the link because we were actually texting this morning. We've got some family that's down in Sarasota. They were at the game last night, sending a bunch of pictures. My 3-year-old godson got Adam Jones' autograph, so my dad and I were texting about that, and I was like, hey, by the way, if you're interested, our radio show starts in a few minutes, so here's the YouTube link. And so if my dad's watching, shout out to you,
my mom. Blake. She tunes in a lot. Like, she tunes in a lot, like more than anybody realistically should. So she may be watching. She hasn't really commented on my show too much. Like, she's never commented on the actual show, but she hasn't really reached out to me about the show. So I don't know if she's still watching or not. I hope she is, especially since it's shorter now. So it requires less attention span from her. I don't know. I do want to remind you all, one last ad here, that if you're craving that New York deli experience, look no further than the new Atman's Deli in Baltimore's Harbor Point. Corned beef, piled high, hand-rolled bagels, and something different, a bar! Atman's Harbor Point. Go to atmansdeli.com for daily specials. Different a bar.
Different a bar. My dad just texted me, nice jobs, guys. So I guess he is awesome. Still watching. Awesome. Thanks, Dad.
Thank you, Mr. Blake, for tuning in. Glad to have your viewership. And I just want to touch on briefly before we get out of here today, the Justin Matta BK contract. The Ravens signed Justin Matta. Hold on. My mom just texted, yes, I'm watching. Thanks for tuning in, Susan Tones. Love you. Thanks so much for tuning in, Mom. Justin Matta BK signs a 4-year, $98 million contract. With the Ravens keeping him in Baltimore. Their sack leader, 13 sacks last year, one of the best defensive linemen in the game, has a new $24.5 million average annual value contract with the Baltimore Ravens, canceling out that franchise tag that they hit him with. They can't use a franchise tag again because they already used it on him. I got lit up yesterday. Absolutely lit up because I tweeted out, we all saw this locker room video, right? Do you remember the locker room video from week 18 where it's like OBJ and Patrick Queen and like Marlon Humphrey and Matta BK sitting in his locker and he's going like this and he looks elated and they're like, congrats, you got your bag, the $25 million man. Do you remember this video? This video freaking existed. I seen it. Maybe they were told to take it down. But that video happened. We all effing saw it. Maybe Ryan didn't see it, but I definitely saw it. And now it's like it never existed, but it 100% did. This isn't a Mandela effect. I 100% saw that video. And I tweeted out yesterday after the contract was announced. I was like, so we all saw this locker room video 2 months ago in week 18. Is there a benefit to announcing the deal now as opposed to back then? What I was saying was, my confusion is, why would you put the I was confused when they put the franchise tag on, because I remember that video. The contract that it shows that he signed is essentially $25 million a year, $24.5 million a year. So it matches up with what the video showed. But now that video just doesn't exist, apparently. I got called an idiot. I got called an ass. I got called stupid. I got told to take this down, delete this tweet quickly. You know what I mean? Like, why would they put the franchise tag on him? And then if they already had him agree to a deal. I don't know how the league calendar works. I don't know if there's something where, like, if you announce that you signed the guy by this date as opposed to this date, maybe you can have less money hit the cap for this coming year. Maybe they used a franchise tag on him because they weren't going to use it on somebody else because they didn't want somebody else to play under that tag, because then they'd have to pay him a ton of money knowing that they were going to sign Matt Abike anyway. They want to pay those contracts twice. I don't know how that works. Okay, but I know that I saw that video. I trust my own eyes. That video did exist. So what the hell, Ryan?
I don't know. Your buddy Josh actually just commented that he saw that video as well. So corroborating what his friend believes here. Look, I don't know. I don't remember that video
personally.
Thank
you, Josh.
And I don't know if it's a salary cap thing. I don't know. I understand that by putting the tag on him, that was like a $22 million cap hit. And then by agreeing to an extension, that hit goes away. If there's one thing in this world that I will never understand, two things. It's taxes and salary cap in the NFL. I don't understand. None of it makes sense. I don't know why it can't just be a cut and dry, like this player's making this much money and that's goes into I don't get it, right? But in any event, independent of all of that stuff, it's absolutely huge that Justin Madubuike is sticking around for four more years. Dude is a destroyer on the front for the Ravens, and I'm happy to keep him around. He's, you know, I've seen some comps to Aaron Donald.
He worked out with Aaron Donald in the off season.
Aaron Donald is So look, he's a stud. I'm glad we're keeping him around. And that bodes well for the Ravens.
He doesn't have a huge cap hit this year. I think it's like $12 million hits the cap this year for that deal. So they can still make other moves to bolster this roster and make another run towards hopefully another Super Bowl. Big signing. I expected the signing when I announced. I wasn't shocked. I knew this was coming because I saw that freaking video. But anyway, I digress. We got to get out of here. By the way, we do. Yeah, we'll talk about it off the show. Thank you all for tuning in. Thanks to our sponsors. Without you, we don't have a show. To all of our listeners, viewers, fans, thank you for tuning in. Without you, we definitely don't have a show. Until next week. See ya.